everybody, and welcome back to Fueling Forward Friday. I'm your host, Maddie Alm, registered dietitian and former elite runner. Today's episode, I will be answering questions you all have submitted to me beforehand. And if you would like to submit any questions in the future, you can do so at my website, www.fuelingforward.com, under the podcast tab, or you can send me an email at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. Thank you for being here today. Happy Friday or whatever day you're listening. I hope everyone is having a great week. As always, thank you so much to everyone who has been submitting questions. I've been getting some really, really great ones, and I always love when there's overlap because I always tell people if you have a question, chances are somebody else out there has the same one. So I can definitely confirm that there is some overlap in questions, which I always love because that way we can answer multiple people's questions at once. Please keep your questions coming. As always, you can submit them on my website, on the podcast page, or you can email me at feelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. You can also always DM me on Instagram as well. Speaking of Instagram, on my personal Instagram, I've been sharing in our neighborhood in LA. We moved here in January. And ever since we've moved here, there's this specific spot wherever we walk the dog, Charlie, when we take her out. And there's this one spot in our neighborhood. It's like this weird, there's a roundabout, and next to the roundabout, there's this tree, and there's like a little dirt path that goes around the tree. And it backs up to a fence of somebody's house, but I don't really think that's has anything to do with it. But we have found a smashed bundt cake in that place on our walk at least once a month, probably more often than that. And we just had another one show up a couple days ago. It is the weirdest thing. I don't know what's going on. I have no theories. I've honestly seen, what is it now? It's September. I've probably seen upwards of 10 to 15 smashed bundt cakes in this specific spot. And it doesn't make any sense. It's not like a regular occurrence. If it was like once a month, I would be like, okay, someone has a weird monthly ritual, whatever. It doesn't make any sense. And they're always different types of cake. Some of them look like they've been pre-sliced. Some of them look like just an entire bundt cake was dumped there. It's really just the greatest mystery of 2025 for me. But I've been trying to come up with theories in my head of what's been going on. My most recent theory is that there's someone who bakes, and when they mess up their cake, they dump it back there for the animals, because we have a lot of like raccoons and skunks and coyotes and birds and stuff over in our neighborhood. So I'm like, maybe they're just like offering food for the animals in the neighborhood. I don't know, but it is seriously the weirdest thing. So yeah, if you have any theories, let me know. I have no idea what's going on. People keep telling me I should set up like a camera to try to catch them in action. But the problem is it's so sporadic. I would have no idea when to set it up or how to check that. But I'm getting to the point where I'm tempted to do that because I really, really want to know what's going on. So anyway, just kind of a funny story for the week. We found another bundt cake on Tuesday. I'll definitely keep you guys posted. But for today, we have a Q&A episode. And before I dive into the questions, I did just want to talk a little bit again about the New York Marathon that I'm going to be running in November. I will be running as a charity runner for the nonprofit organization Track Girls. And Track Girls is a really incredible organization. They're working to empower young women through track and field. They offer scholarships, they offer mentorship programs. They're just trying to help fill the gap, especially in low-income communities, to help keep girls in sport, because there's a very high dropout rate of girls in sport as they grow up. And so it's definitely something that's near and dear to my heart, having been a high school coach for a really long time. I coached in Colorado for 6 or 7 years, and I'm volunteer coaching out here in LA as well. And it's just a population that, I've been in their shoes. Probably a lot of you listening have been a high school runner at some point, and just doing what we can to keep girls in sport is so important. So I am so grateful to have this opportunity to run the New York Marathon for Track Girls to help empower them and grow their organization. They get about a third to a half of their annual funding from this New York City Marathon fundraiser. So it's a huge deal for them. My goal is to raise $4,500 for them, by November. I'm actually partnering with Hedda's to help raise funds. We're going to host a donation-based giveaway. So for every $50 you donate, you get an entry to win a race day support package, which is a super cool thing that Hedda's has put together. You can win a free pair of Hedda's, a t-shirt. You actually get a race day fueling consultation with me. So we would meet via Zoom and talk about your race day fueling strategy. And you also get a couple of other goodies from brands that believe in women's sport. So it's a super cool package, way beyond a $50 value. And if you, you know, donate $100, you get two entries to win. So if you're open to, or if you're in a place where you can consider donating, truly any and everything helps. Even if you're not able to donate that full $50, anything and everything helps. So I will put the link to donate in the show notes from today. There's also a link on my website. Again, would really greatly appreciate any and all support from you guys. I'm so grateful for the Fueling Forward community, and figured there's no one else better to reach out to. So if you're open to doing that, if you're in a place to do that, please consider donating. It would be so appreciated. All right, that said, I think we'll go ahead and get into today's questions. So starting out, this first question says, "Hi, I'm a high school senior and a big fan of your podcast. I run cross country and track and have practice at 3:30 p.m. every day. My lunch period is at 10:15 a.m. though, and while I'm allowed to eat during class, I'm having trouble figuring out when and how much to eat before practice. I'm also working on period recovery, so I know carbs are super important. Do you have any suggestions or tips? Thanks." Yeah, this is a fantastic question and one that I know probably applies to a lot of people listening. I don't know what it is with schools and lunches being at the weirdest times. I don't know why we can't just do a standard lunch at like noon, but I feel like so many of the high school kids I work with, their lunch is either at 10 or it's at 1 o'clock or something, where it's either super early or it's super late. So I know it can be really tricky to figure out your fueling schedule. I definitely think a big mistake high school runners often make, and I did this myself in high school, is being concerned about your stomach hurting at practice and not wanting to eat much before practice. That can actually increase your risk for stomach issues. So if you are somebody who deals with stomach issues at practice, not eating doesn't actually help. It has more to do with likely what you're eating prior to training. And if you're waiting too long without eating before you go train, that can also increase risk of GI issues. Also, hydration is a big thing. So if I was working with a high school athlete who has lunch at 10:15, basically the way that I would recommend that you structure your day is that you have a big breakfast in the morning before you leave. So for a lot of high schoolers, this means we have to get up a little earlier or we have to plan ahead. I was not a morning person in high school. I was the kid that got up like 10 minutes before I had to be at the bus stop. So I am not telling you that you have to suddenly become a morning person. But it is very important that you make sure you're getting a solid, balanced breakfast in, especially with that early lunch and then practice after school. If we're not eating enough at breakfast and then we're, you know, worried about eating leading up to practice, chances are we're going to end up pretty underfueled at the end of the day. So getting a solid breakfast in is kind of step one. And depending on how much time you have, or what time your school starts, I should say, like, let's say you can eat breakfast around 7 o'clock. You know, if you have time to make something substantial, I would recommend doing something like scrambled eggs, toaster waffles with maple syrup, fruit, you know, things like that, where you're getting a good amount of carbs and color and protein. Overnight oats are a great thing to make the night before. So that's a super grab and go friendly option in the morning. If you're someone who's rushing out the door, you know, maybe you need to have something that's pre-made, like a frozen breakfast burrito. You can always make those yourself over the weekend and freeze them, or you can buy them pre-made at the store. There's lots of really great options. Just being mindful to pair that with some type of, you know, additional color and carb, because typically by itself, it's not going to be quite enough. So maybe adding, you know, an apple and a glass of orange juice to go with it to balance that out a little bit. Still very grab and go friendly, but just going to be a little more substantial. So really trying to make sure you're having a solid breakfast, you know, around 7 o'clock. If lunch is at 10:15, you may or may not need a snack in between, depending on how you're feeling. So if you did need a snack, if you're someone who tends to get hungry, I would have a small snack so that you still feel hungry for lunch. So something like one of those really small trail mix pouches from Trader Joe's would be a good example. Then if we have lunch at 10:15, this is pretty far away from practice. So you're going to have plenty of time to digest before you have to run. But we definitely want to focus here on getting a lot of carbs in, getting in some protein as well, probably a little bit of color, but not overdoing it on the color. So a good example of a lunch I would recommend would be like a simple turkey sandwich with turkey and cheese, maybe some avocado, a side of pretzels, and a banana with peanut butter. That would be a pretty solid lunch to have, you know, around 10-15. And then because we have about 5 hours until practice, we definitely want to make sure we have an afternoon snack, but I would recommend trying to get two things in before practice. So probably around like 1 or 1:30, having another snack. So this might be something a little more substantial, like a Clif bar, like a peanut butter Clif bar, and maybe an applesauce pouch. So we're getting a good amount. And then right before practice, so if practice is at 3:30, most of the time we're not actually running right at 3:30. We stretch, we kind of meet as a group, you know, have a couple of extra minutes. So getting in a little something like a packet of fruit snacks or a honey stinger waffle, maybe around 3:15 before you actually start running is how I would space that out. And then I would definitely make sure you bring something to have after practice, like a chocolate milk or a protein bar. You know, then you get home and you have dinner, and then you can have a snack before bed. So just kind of spacing it out that way, where we have breakfast, lunch, snack, snack, practice, snack, dinner, snack. Just so we space it out, so we have still three solid meals in a day, we have a pre and a post run snack, and we have at least two other snacks sometime during the day. We can kind of space that out however it feels the best for you. I would say on the flip side, if you're somebody who has a late lunch, like a 1 o'clock lunch, I would have, again, a big breakfast sometime around 7. I would try to have that bigger snack. So what I mentioned earlier, like the Clif bar, maybe you do that with a banana, the peanut butter Clif bar and a banana, and maybe even like some pretzels to make it a little bit bigger. I would try to have that around 10. And then for your 1 o'clock lunch, I would keep that pretty simple. So something like that turkey sandwich and maybe some pretzels. You could have that packet of fruit snacks right before practice, then have that snack after, and then dinner. So just thinking about, we want to have some type of pre-run snack about an hour before we run, and then eating about every 2 to 3 hours before that. So however that makes the most sense with your school schedule and when you're actually able to eat in class. The last thing that I would say for those later afternoon practices is hydration is going to be a huge factor. So making sure that you're drinking not just water, but that you're also drinking electrolytes leading up to practice, especially this time of year, it can be so hot for after school practices. Like out here in LA right now, it's still in the mid to high 80s, sometimes 90s for after school practices. So that's definitely something to consider. Making sure that you're drinking, you know, if you have like a 32 ounce water bottle that you bring with you to school, I would try to have one in the morning between getting to school and lunch, and then a second one between lunch and practice. And I would put electrolytes in that second bottle. So that could be something like Liquid IV, Scratch Daily or regular Scratch Hydration, Element, you know, whatever you like, something that has, I would say, at least 300-400 milligrams of sodium per serving. That's kind of what I would go for. The last part of this question mentioned that she's going through period recovery as well, and that carbs are very important. You're absolutely right. We never want to go into a run without fueling. That's a huge aspect of period recovery. So again, those fruit snacks, like something small right before a run, is a great way to prevent yourself from digging into energy stores too much and depleting yourself. You also might want to consider bringing something that has carbs with you to practice. So maybe a Gatorade, Scratch, some type of electrolyte drink that has carbs in it that you can sip on throughout practice, especially if it's going to be a longer run or workout, just to help prevent you from getting into too big of a deficit. And then definitely bringing something with you to have right after your run. You know, as I've talked about before, even if it seems like you're eating dinner right after practice, realistically, from the time that you actually finish your run and get home and eat, you know, by the time you stretch and chat with your friends, either wait to get picked up or you get home, maybe we're waiting on family members to get home before we actually start dinner, it ends up being at least an hour, a lot of times more than that. So just being really cognizant of bringing something with you so you can get that in as soon as possible post-run. But that's a super great question, and I hope a lot of people will find that really helpful. Okay, this next question says, can you share your opinion on energy drinks? Yeah, I'm glad you bring this up. So energy drinks are, in all honesty, not my favorite thing for athletes for several reasons. I think the first issue generally that I have with like energy drinks and caffeine throughout the day is that it can often be a band-aid for underfueling. So if you feel like you can't get through the day without caffeine, that is a red flag for me as a dietitian. If someone's like, oh, I get so tired, I have to have that afternoon cup of coffee or energy drink to make it through my afternoon classes or afternoon practices, definitely a red flag for me that there's probably something going on with fueling. You know, athletes before have said like, but I don't feel hungry, so I don't really feel like I need to eat. Appetite suppression can happen from underfueling. Caffeine can also be an appetite suppressant. So the other issue that I have with caffeine is if we are underfueling and that's why we need caffeine, caffeine can often make that issue worse or kind of feed it back into that cycle because now it's further suppressing your appetite and kind of telling you, I don't feel like I need to eat anything, so that must not be the problem. So something that can be helpful if you're somebody who has noticed you generally don't have much of an appetite, but you're really struggling with energy, your body can be sending you different types of signals that you're hungry that you may not be aware of. So sometimes people will notice that when it's time for them to eat, they start to feel like they get a lot of brain fog, they're having a hard time focusing or listening to conversations, focusing in class or like remembering what they're learning in class. Some people start to feel really tired, so they start to feel like they're doing the head bobbing thing in class or they're having a harder time, again, just feeling awake and alert. Some people start to notice they start to feel really fatigued, so their energy level starts dropping. Maybe you notice that your mood is shifting a little bit, you're feeling a little bit more irritable or on edge. Maybe you start to get a headache. That can be another one that people notice when it's time for them to eat. Maybe you're feeling a little bit like weak, or like when you stand up, you start to get that kind of dizzy, like blackout vision feeling. Those could all be signs or symptoms that your body is telling you it needs something. And those can happen in the absence of physical hunger. So I think it's important to tune into your body when it feels like it's time for an energy drink and ask yourself, is there a reason why I might be feeling this way? Would eating something potentially help? Again, the other issue with that caffeine intake is it can be really disruptive overall to your body's natural circadian rhythm. So if you're struggling with sleep and you're not getting enough sleep and then you're feeling really tired, so you're having to have afternoon caffeine, that can really impact your ability to sleep because caffeine can stay in your system for up to 8 hours. So if you're having an energy drink, you know, at 3 or 4 o'clock before practice, and then you're trying to go to bed at 9 and you're having a hard time falling asleep, you're tossing and turning, now you're only going to get 5 hours of sleep, you wake up, you're exhausted, do it all over again. Caffeine actually might be part of the issue. So I do tell people if you're going to have caffeine, which I'm not against caffeine, I have coffee every day. I'm not telling you not to have caffeine. But if you're going to have caffeine, have a cutoff time and have a limit so you're not pushing your body's circadian rhythm out of whack. When it comes to actual energy drinks, they are, in my opinion, not the best source of caffeine for a couple of reasons. They are not regulated. So energy drinks can have a lot of sketchy ingredients. You know, there's kind of sneaky ways that companies can add ingredients that aren't necessarily on the label. Sometimes they add things like taurine, which can give you that kind of stimulant effect. And energy drinks, it's a lot easier to end up consuming way more caffeine than you realize, especially because sometimes they can be tricky with serving sizes on the label. It might tell you there's 50 milligrams of caffeine per serving, but if you look at the label, there may be 2 or even more servings in a can of energy drink. So, you know, they can be sneaky in those ways. The ingredients in there aren't always great, and they can definitely cause some gut irritation. So a couple years ago, I had a runner when I was coaching back in Colorado, and she would only get side cramps on race day, and we couldn't figure out what was going on. She was like, I don't understand. I don't get them in practice. And I started kind of asking her, okay, what do you do differently? What do you eat differently? What do you drink differently? And that's when it came out that she was having a Celsius energy drink before races. And as soon as we stopped the Celsius, she stopped having side aches. So there are ingredients often in those energy drinks that can irritate your gut, that can cause other issues, that often end up working against you when it comes to performance. And I would just say generally, there's going to be more constructive things that we could be consuming from a performance and a health standpoint. So couple, I would say, parameters I try to set for people that do like energy drinks. I completely understand if that's something that you enjoy. You know, being mindful of how often you're using them. I wouldn't recommend doing that daily or multiple times a day. You know, being mindful again of, is there a reason why I'm feeling tired? Could there be something else going on? I don't recommend having caffeine on an empty stomach, so making sure that you're pairing it with some type of food if you are going to have caffeine, especially, you know, an energy drink later in the day or coffee later in the day, making sure that you're pairing it with food. Again, being mindful of that cutoff time, so how close to bedtime am I drinking this? Might this interfere with my sleep? And then lastly, I think just thinking about, is this the most constructive thing for me to be having? There are other sources of caffeine that are going to provide additional benefit aside from just, you know, whatever's going on in energy drinks. So for example, a caffeinated noon tablet or caffeinated scratch hydration, those are also going to give you electrolytes and hydration. And the ingredients are going to be a little bit more gut friendly, more performance friendly, and you'll still get a little bit of caffeine. So if you're going to consume caffeine, I recommend trying to use products like that or just regular naturally occurring caffeine from coffee or tea. Same rules apply though to naturally occurring caffeine, having it with food, being mindful of how close to bedtime you're having it, you know, having a cutoff time, and also not using it as a band-aid for underfueling. Those are some of my personal recommendations as a dietitian. If I'm working with an athlete who's wanting energy drinks, we're usually digging deeper into why we're needing them and then ways in which we can maybe incorporate them more safely or in a way that's better for overall health and performance. So my general thoughts are I don't recommend them, but I also understand that some people really do enjoy them. So just being mindful of how you're using them would be my suggestion there. Okay, this next question is from Aiden and it's a two-parter. It says, hi Maddie, I have two questions. I'm in my first few months post-college running, so my nutrition is now fully my responsibility since I no longer have access to the RD and snacks or food at school. With less routine, now I sometimes find myself getting off track and trying to get in more calories and carbs later at night because I didn't eat enough earlier on. What do you recommend for developing an eating schedule for life that is less structured than college? I'm also running relatively high mileage, about 95 miles per week, and with my schedule, my long run and workout days are significantly longer at about 17 to 20 miles compared to some of my easy days that are about 8 to 10 miles. Should I be eating notably less or not feeling as hungry on easy days, or should I be trying to keep my fueling more consistent? Thanks. Both super great questions, Aiden. Thanks for submitting those. I think both of them apply to people, not just people right out of college, but people in general who are settling into new routines or maybe, you know, working a new job or even just trying to figure out day-to-day schedules. I know that can be super tricky, especially if you feel like you don't have a ton of routine. So the first thing that I would say in terms of trying to get into a better routine, I see this a lot in athletes where we're kind of backloading the second half of the day with calories and with carbs, either because we just didn't get enough in earlier in the day, we didn't realize it, or we get home and we're starving and we don't understand why. And so the majority of calories and, you know, carbs and things like that end up being between dinner and going to bed. And the issue with that is we typically are putting ourselves into a really big deficit, and that can definitely, again, impact that circadian rhythm that I mentioned earlier. Those within-day deficits can also increase your risk for things like reds and losing your menstrual cycle for female athletes. So we want to make sure that we're not going these long stretches without eating. And as much as possible, we want to try to keep our intake throughout the day fairly consistent to avoid that backloading. So a lot of times if we are backloading at the end of the day, we might notice that we feel uncomfortably full after we eat. We might have more bloating or GI issues. We might even have a harder time falling asleep. So those are some things that can happen if we're kind of saving up for the end of the day, whether that's intentional or not. So I think the key to getting more consistent with fueling throughout the day as much as possible is to try to get on a schedule. And I know that maybe your schedule is less structured now compared to when you were in school and you had class times and things like that. But still thinking about, can I get up at the same time every day? Can I have my pre-run snack at the same time every day? After that, of course, it'll look a little bit different in terms of when you're actually going to be able to fuel, depending on how long your runs are. You know, of course, easy days, you might only be gone for an hour, whereas those longer run days, you're probably gone for 2 to 3 hours. And so after that, it's going to look a little bit different. But thinking about, we want to try to have 3 meals in a day. We want to make sure we're having a pre and a post run snack, and we want to make sure that we're having at least one or two other snacks during the day, depending on our schedule. And I should say, with the post run snack, that doesn't always have to be a snack. That can be a meal on days where you're able to eat within, you know, half an hour to an hour of finishing that run. So like easy run days, typically we're going to have a meal post run. We may need an additional snack later in the day, but definitely depends on your schedule. So, you know, let's say you're going to get up at 7 every day. You have your pre-run snack at 7:30. On easy run days, maybe you get home and you're making breakfast at 9, and then we're trying to eat every 2 to 3 hours from there. So maybe we try to have lunch around noon. We have a snack around 3. We have dinner at 6, and then we have a bedtime snack around 8 or 9, depending on when you're going to bed. So even if your typical day varies a bit from day to day, having that general outline in your head can be a helpful way to anchor the rest of your day. You can also schedule meals and snacks into your calendar. I have a lot of athletes do this who are trying to establish a better schedule, especially if you're somebody who has like meetings during the workday. If you're fairly flexible, you know, of course, there's going to be things that come up that aren't in your control and you're going to have to move things around. That's not a huge deal. But even just like when you sit down to eat breakfast at 9, setting a reminder for noon so that you have your lunch. And then when you sit down to eat lunch at noon, setting a reminder for 3 o'clock when it's time for you to have your snack. And the more consistent you are with this schedule, the more your body will catch on and the more you'll notice your appetite is coming back at those times and you're feeling like it's time to eat. So that should get a little bit easier. Let's say it's a day that you have a long run or a workout. Maybe you have your pre-run at 7:30. Then you're not getting home or you're finishing your run maybe closer to like 11. You have your post-run snack at 11. Then maybe we have our first meal. So this is something that's a little different for athletes. I don't consider your pre-run a meal. I consider that a snack. So your quote-unquote breakfast or your post-run would maybe be at noon or 11:30. Then you would actually have your lunch maybe closer to 3. Then we have dinner at 6, and then I would say we try to have a bigger snack before bed. So we're still kind of getting in that consistent amount of fueling, but it's just going to look a little bit different based on when your training sessions are. I think another important part of executing a schedule like that is planning ahead. So having an idea of what do I want to have for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner, for snacks. You know, I've said this before, but spending a little time on a Saturday or a Sunday, if you have a long run on a Sunday, I would recommend doing this on Saturday because chances are you're not going to feel up to doing all of this right after that long run. But thinking about what are some options for the upcoming week and just picking a couple things so you're not having to choose between, you know, or make something up based on what's in your fridge. Like you're picking, okay, breakfast for this week, I'm going to alternate between overnight oats and scrambled eggs with bagel and fruit. So you have kind of those two items in your head that you're choosing between. And then, you know, you come up with the same thing for snacks and for lunches and for dinners. And then you build a grocery list and then you go grocery shopping and you have everything you need for the week. So you don't have to then, on top of trying to figure out when you're trying to eat, you also don't have to then decide what you're making, figure out how to make it. You know, the more barriers you can remove to executing your plan, the more likely it is that you'll be able to do it. So once you have that kind of schedule in your mind, thinking about, okay, what does that mean in terms of what do I need to come up with for meals and snacks? How do I plan that out? And then making your grocery list. So it's more likely that you'll execute that by having those things on hand. The second part of your question, thinking about, should I be feeling less hungry on easy days versus hard days, or should I be eating less? The short answer to that is no. So when we think about energy balance, yes, we have within day energy balance, but we also want to think about this more in terms of big picture, long term, over the course of the week, the month, the year. So for most runners, especially at this mileage, this 95 miles per week, which I would not consider relatively high, I would definitely consider that high mileage. The amount that you're running on a daily basis, yes, it might vary. But if you think about, you know, doing a 20 mile day, the chances of you being able to put in enough fuel to compensate for how much you're burning during that 20 miles is fairly low. Like it's just very difficult to get enough fuel in to replenish what you're losing. But on an 8 mile day or a 10 mile day, even if we overshoot what we, you know, burn in that 8 or 10 miles, now we're going to help correct that deficit from the day before. So over the course of a week, you know, we might be alternating between under and over fueling, but it might balance out. It typically does balance out if we keep our fueling pretty consistent. So that is why I do not recommend trying to eat less on shorter days. We also, when we're thinking about like the performance plate model that I've talked about before, where we try to have half of our plate as carbohydrates, we also are thinking about total weekly volume when I'm prescribing a plate model to an athlete. If you're running 50 miles a week or more, or if you're a teenage athlete and you're growing, so a high schooler or even a collegiate athlete, you should always be following that hard day plate model across the board. Easy days, off days, workout days. You know, on workout days, we might try to get a little bit more in by adding in fuel during runs, adding in more to snacks, even adding more at meals. But that, you know, half of your plate is carbs is kind of the bare minimum for you if you're running 50 plus miles a week, or if you're a collegiate or high school athlete. So for this person who's running 95 miles per week, yes, you want to make sure that you're still getting a substantial amount of fuel, even on those easy days. In terms of your appetite, a lot of athletes notice that they do feel hungrier on easy days, which can be confusing. So oftentimes a reason why that's happening is, one, we're just in a big deficit from the day before still. So we just need a little extra to help our body recover, and that's totally fine. Another reason might be that we have more of that appetite suppression on a hard run day, but we don't have as much of that on an easy run day. So we actually notice our appetite a little bit more. And then a third reason is maybe we're underfueling on that easy day, whether that's intentional or not. If we're telling ourselves, oh, it's just an easy day, it doesn't really matter if I stay on top of my fueling, or we're saying something like, oh, it's an easy day, which means I should probably be eating less. Those might be situations where you feel a lot hungrier, which can cause a lot of stress if you're like, well, I shouldn't be eating this much on my easy run day. I didn't run as much. So remember that you're not just fueling for today. You're also fueling to recover from yesterday, and you're fueling to prepare for tomorrow. It doesn't matter if you had an easy or an off day today. Fueling is still incredibly important and will be a really big factor in overall energy availability, reducing injury risk, and just making sure that you're able to tolerate the type of mileage that you're doing. Thanks for that question, Aiden. That was a great one. Okay, the last question for today says, hi, Maddie. I know this isn't nutrition related, but I'm trying to walk on to my university's cross-country team next year, and I know you mentioned you went through a similar process. Do you have any tips? Thanks so much. Yes, I love this question, and I know it's not nutrition related, but I love speaking to my personal experience as a walk-on. You know, looking back, there are definitely a lot of things that I'm proud of myself for doing and a lot of things that I wish I would have done differently. So I'm always happy to share that advice. I think the first thing to prepare for is just knowing that you might be coming onto the team as one of the slower athletes, and there is nothing wrong with that. I was by far and away the slowest runner at CU, which was, you know, in some ways stressful, but also in some ways to be expected. It's a high caliber program. You know, I felt very fortunate that I was able to try out and make it. And so even though you might find yourself in the bottom, you know, quadrant of the team, that doesn't mean you don't belong there. If you walk on and you make it, you earned that spot, just like everybody else who's out there. So not allowing yourself to feel inferior to those runners, and reminding yourself that you belong there just as much as they do, and you've worked just as hard, sometimes even harder, having to train on your own and prepare on your own for walking on. That's a really hard thing to do mentally and physically. So just reminding yourself that you belong there, you earned this, and there's no reason why you should feel inferior to those athletes. The other thing that I would say with walking on is, for me personally, I found that I had a ton of room for improvement. My ceiling was so much higher than I ever thought possible. I think because I came from a lower mileage program in high school, which was so beneficial for me as a runner, it really gave me so much room to improve in college and then beyond college. And so remembering too what your background is. If you came from a lower mileage program, you know, don't try to just jump up your mileage to keep up with the people on the team. You know, you want to be really smart about your trajectory, because chances are it's going to be a slower build. So I would say prepare yourself to have patience. You know, that's definitely something that I had to learn the hard way. I was not a very patient runner. I wanted results now. I wanted to be good now. I wanted to be better now, which of course we all do, right? We're all working hard and we all want those PRs. We want those good races. But I think zooming out a bit and thinking long term, what are your goals walking on? Chances are, if you're walking on to a collegiate team, your goal is to be there for at least the next 3 or 4 years, maybe even longer. And that's really the amount of time you want to give yourself to reach those goals. Chances are it's not going to take that entire time, but just understanding that we're not going to jump in and immediately see that success. We have to give our body an adjustment period to establish its new baseline with a new training load, with a new training approach, with a new coach, with new teammates. Maybe you're adding in strength training, maybe you're adding in cross training. You're probably doing a lot of things that your body has never done before, and it can take a little bit of time for that to actually show up. So really being patient and thinking long term, what are my goals for walking on? Where do I see myself at the end of my time in college, or what are my goals for the end of college, and how can I work my way there gradually? Usually anytime we see immediate success, it may or may not be sustainable. Not to say that if you have immediate success, you're doomed. That's certainly not the case. But, you know, acknowledging that a slow burn sometimes is what athletes need. And that's kind of what I needed. And then I think along those lines, really trying hard not to compare yourself and your times and your workouts to athletes around you. That was one of the hardest things for me when I walked onto the CU team. A big workout that CU prioritizes or did when I was there were long runs. That was totally new for me. In high school, I think I ran maybe one or two like 75 to 80 minute runs. I don't think I ever ran in the double digits. At CU, most of the girls on the team were running anywhere from 12 to 16 miles. And they hammer long runs. Like, they would do fast long runs, which is a completely new concept for me. So they would be running, you know, 16 miles at 6:30 pace or even faster. And that was just so foreign to me. And I was like, how do they do this? There's no way. But every single week, you know, I would get through, I think I only had 8 miles to start with. I would do my 8 mile runs at 8 minute pace. And then, you know, after a few weeks or a few months, I was able to break 8 minutes for my long runs. And then I was able to work up to 10 miles. And then, you know, my pace was getting faster. And then I got up to 12 miles. And then by my fifth year, I was right there with them running 13 miles at 6:30 pace. And that's something I never would have imagined, you know, when I walked on. So instead of comparing yourself to what your current teammates are doing, trying to measure your own growth week by week, and starting over again at the start of a new season. So never comparing yourself to your past selves, always thinking about how can I just get a little bit better than I was the week before within this specific season, within this comeback from injury, within this timeline, you know, and not thinking back to, well, high school Maddie, you know, placed this place in her first race and I'm nowhere near that. It's a totally different playing field college running is, and, you know, post-collegiate running and road running, everything is just so different. So trying really hard not to compare yourself to those around you, and really trying to find that motivation to better yourself from within, not from comparison to others, not saying, I want to be as good as this runner, saying, I want to be as good of a runner as I can be. And that's going to look different for everybody. You know, I've said this before, everyone's ceilings are different. So while it may seem like some runners are really successful, the way they're approaching things isn't sustainable, their ceiling might be a lot higher if they were doing things correctly. Whereas someone who is doing things correctly might be closer to their ceiling. And it can be frustrating if you feel like your ceiling is lower than someone else's. I know that's really hard. But just really trying to focus on how can I make my ceiling as high as possible? And what can I do to give myself the best chance of reaching that every day? And then I think my last tip for somebody who's walking on, really just try to remember why you're here. Running is meant to be fun. It's meant to be something that adds to your life. It's not meant to be your entire life. I think as a walk-on, I had the benefit of having a life outside of running. I walked on my sophomore year, so I actually did not run my freshman year. I had a just like typical freshman year, someone who's not a student athlete. And I made a lot of friends outside of running. I did a lot of things outside of running. And having life outside of running, having people who cared about me outside of running was so instrumental to me personally for my mental health with running, because it really put it into perspective that running is meant to be something fun, and it's meant to be something that brings me joy, that makes me feel strong, that shows me how tough I can be. But it's also not my entire identity. It's not all of my self-worth. You know, who I am as a person and how much people love me has nothing to do with how fast I run. And I think that was really protective for me when I was struggling with that comparison or feeling like I was worse than people on the team. It wasn't a super welcoming environment, to be honest, initially when I walked on, and that was really hard. But knowing that I had friends outside of running made it easier to get through those practices and say, okay, it doesn't matter if, you know, people aren't being super welcoming. I have friends. It's okay. So just giving yourself permission to enjoy life outside of running, and remember that running is meant to be fun, and try to make it something that you enjoy and have fun with so that you don't feel burnt out, because walking on is the best thing I've ever done. It was the best choice I ever made, but it's also probably one of the hardest things I've ever done, one of my proudest accomplishments. So it's going to be hard. There's going to be hard days. There's going to be less hard days, but I just would say, like, buckle up, enjoy the ride, and believe in yourself. You can do this. You can absolutely do this. Why not you? Thank you so much, everyone, for submitting your questions. These were all fantastic, and I hope you all have a great rest of your week. Thank you so much for listening to the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to submit a question for the next Q&A episode, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.